Decompression. The woman riding back toward Prentice with Tricia was filthy and barely dressed. She looked as if she were in her mid to late 40s, ridden hard and put away wet. She and the boys spent much of the ride with their faces glued to the passenger window's content to watch the scenery go by. She told Tricia that her name was Mary. Nothing more, just Mary. The boy volunteered that his name was John. John wondered out loud where his mother and his father were. Mary told them that they'd talk about it later. Tricia suspected several truths about her passengers, but decided that it wasn't time to talk with the boy about what happened back on the highway. Tricia decided to take the rest of refugees to Magnolia instead of to the shelter. She called to get permission from Sheriff Roy. He in turn called Emily Stevens to ask if she could meet Tricia at the community church to arrange a shower and some clothing for the pair. The women of Magnolia Community Church mobilized quickly. By the time Tricia arrived, showers, clothing, and a warm meal were ready for the refugees. Mary was overwhelmed. She broke down and cried for at least 15 minutes before she could talk. John took everything in stride, walking and wandering from room to a well-ordered room with several older boys at his side. Sheriff Roy arrived after the meal with a social worker from Children's Services, Pastor Dan, and Jabo Hatfield from the Mental Health Center. While arrangements were made for temporary housing for Mary and John, Roy called Tricia over to the side to discuss the situation. "This whole situation's pretty screwed up," Roy told her. "The woman from the house, Mary, she told us her name is Mary. Well, anyway, it's suspected that Mary is maybe someone who was presumed dead from a case down in Brown County 18 years ago. She was 13 at the time she went missing, so she's barely in her 30s. "How do you know this?" Tricia asked. "I don't really. It's just that I got a call from the sheriff in Brown County asking about the woman not long after you left. I suspect that one of our deputies may have tipped him off about the accident and the aftermath this afternoon." "That's interesting," she observed. "I wonder if the elusive deputy from Lawrence County made the call." "Could be. He does get around." "Was Deputy Seely patrolling this afternoon?" "Well, yes," Roy confirmed. "Seely was first on the scene. He made the trip to the morgue with the girl's body. I haven't seen him since. Let's see if he's on his way here." He took his cell phone out and called the dispatcher. After a brief conversation, he turned back to Tricia. "Seely's on his way here," he told her. "Hopefully he has some useful information." Questions about Deputy Seely's whereabouts were forgotten while Roy and Jabo from the Mental Health Center had a few moments to talk with Mary about the suicide by the side of the highway. Cries of anguish came from the women when she was told that her husband and her daughter were dead. 45 minutes later, Roy pulled Tricia aside. "The girl was apparently the boy John's mother. The boy's father is also the girl's father. He sent the girl away not long after the boy was born. Mary told me that the girl was taken away by one of Russell's men. The girl came back this morning almost dead. One of Russell's men came and took her away, and that was the last she saw of the girl." "Did you ask her about, or did you find out if she was the woman missing from Brown County?" she asked. "Never got that far. Jabo went and gave her something to help her sleep. Hopefully she'll be able to tell us something in the morning." Tricia glanced over at the boy called John. He was bonding to the Stevens boys and their sisters. She smiled, knowing that he would be safe, at least for tonight. She then looked around the room again to see if somehow Will Seely had arrived. When she didn't see him, she mentioned his absence to Sheriff Roy. "He's probably back down on his beat," Roy assured her. "If nothing else, he keeps a good eye on the folk down there. We're lucky to have him." "Yeah, lucky," she repeated. Doubts about Deputy Seely were beginning to edge their way into her mind. A returning threat. It was close to 9 o'clock when Tricia finally got back home. Glenn greeted her with a warm cup of herbal tea, which she took out to the hot tub on the back deck. "I heard there's another body," he mentioned once they got settled. "What did you find out? Anything good?" I found out something you may not like hearing, she said, giving him a kiss. Like what? Like Hannah's mother. Sheriff Ball thinks that she may have been a prostitute. I suspected as much, and it really doesn't surprise me, Glenn told her. The parade of people coming in on Sundays when I worked for Zeke was a zoo. One of the shows was run by a woman whose testimony was that she was a reformed prostitute now saving souls for the Lord. Zeke told me that he thought that she was still practicing. She had a place down in Crabtree where she kept a small harem of girls for hire. When Zeke told me that Hannah's mother wanted men to stay away from her, he said something to the effect that if all I wanted to do was to get laid, he might be able to arrange it. You never told me this, Tricia complained. There wasn't any reason, Glenn replied. He only mentioned it once, and I really don't think he was serious. I'm sure that there are things you never told me either. Tricia considered saying something to Glenn about her flight from Jumpstart. Instead, she went on the offensive. You had other girls by the time you met Hannah, right? Only in my imagination. There are only two girls I had any desire for before I met Hannah. Both were out of reach to me within 6 months after I saw either of them. I lost my virginity on a woman I met just after I finished college. It was one of those wrong-head doing the thinking things, you see. I think we can both relate to having poor judgment when we were younger, she said. I've had a few crushes myself before taking on an inappropriate lover. She paused, thinking that Glenn might say something which would require a revelation on her part. Instead, she shifted the subject. I've been doing some research. Do you remember Hoke telling us about a place called Gilbert's up in Prentice? I remember him saying something about it. It was a bar which was apparently run on the outskirts of the law. Illegal booze, gambling, prostitutes, you know, a real family sort of place. Sounds like fun, he said. Have you found out where it is? Tricia filled Glenn in on what she had found out at the sheriff's office and by talking with Asa Ammons. I may go back to see Roy tomorrow. I'd like to look again at the case records to see if this Quentin Russell Asa told me about was in any way involved, she concluded. What have you found out, if anything, about him? From what little Asa told me, Quentin Russell was one of Johnny Ross's deputies. He's the deputy who most likely killed Nadine Brown. Whether on purpose or accidentally, I can't be certain. I wasn't paying attention when I first looked over the records regarding the disappearance, but I looked over them this afternoon, and I'll be damned if most of the records were at least initialed by Quentin Russell. A Q is a hard thing to miss. Glenn spent the rest of the remainder of the evening looking over Tricia's notes while she pored over copies of adoption records from the county home. Eventually, they tired of their tasks and decided to start their investigations again in the morning. Tricia followed Glenn into Magnolia on Saturday morning so she could catch breakfast and later go back up to Prentice to have another chat with Sheriff Roy. The mood in the cafe was lighthearted and festive. The girls running the restaurant were determined to keep away the doom and gloom so often associated with mid-October. Of course, the mood was helped by a win for the Magnolia Marauders the previous evening. Glenn was spending time with the Booster Club when Fred Granger came in the front door. Fred looked around for a few moments before sitting down in the booth where Tricia was eating her breakfast. Sally Brown was down to our house last night, he told her quietly, looking around to see if they were being overheard. She said something about getting a visit from Russell's man, and that Russell's man told her not to talk to no one about her family no more. Russell's man said that she especially shouldn't be talking to you. She was talking about Quentin Russell, wasn't she? Tricia asked. Well, yeah, Quentin Russell's something like 80 years old these days. Doesn't get out much, so I hear. He has people he knows to be his arms and legs. Do you know who these people are? Don't know. No one knows who Russell's men are. They usually call and leave messages. Sally and Earl often keep their phone off the hook, so one of them probably gave him a personal visit. Fred was offered a cup of coffee, which he gratefully accepted. Tricia told him to order breakfast, too, if he was hungry. Thanks, but I can't. There's a complication. Russell's man told Sally to come down the hollow and tell me the same thing that he told her. He said for her to tell me that I was being watched and that aside from telling you to stay away, I was not to talk with you either. I see, Tricia told him. You said that Russell's man didn't talk to you directly? No. All I had was a message from Sally that Russell's man visited her and told her to tell me not to talk to you. It must have been serious. Sally hardly ever comes down to see or talk to me. The only contact we have most times is through Earl. Well, how often does Sally come down the hollow to see you? Tricia asked. Including last night, I've seen her 3 times since we moved into the house back in 78, Fred told her. Earl keeps her on a tight leash. Even if he didn't, she hated me for, well, I told Glenn why, and I suppose my better half told you too. Anyway, the last time I saw her was just after that one brother of hers committed suicide. Come to think of it, the reason she was down that night was because one of Russell's men had visited her concerning the relation she and I had back on the day of the disappearance. Then there is more than one of these Russell's men, she surmised. There's at least one at most times. I've heard that there may be as many as a dozen back in the day. Sheriff Roy may be able to give you a better count. Fred took another sip of coffee before getting up from the table. Sorry to leave so quick, but I ain't going to take no chances. Russell may have someone here in this room right now, and if word gets out that I've been here for more than a few minutes... He looked over his shoulder to see if anyone had noticed before leaving out the back door. Glenn came over to Tricia's booth after Fred left to ask about Fred's visit. She told him what Fred had told her. Again, she considered telling Glenn about her personal connection. So, just as I thought, Russell's men have become active again. Sheriff Roy paced his office while Tricia told about the visit she had less than an hour earlier. If I was a whole lot more suspicious, I'd bet that Philip Farmer has something to do with this. I mean, it's awfully convenient for them to make their move right now, right in the middle of elections. And it doesn't help your credibility either, Tricia remarked. So tell me, what do you know about Quentin Russell and these so-called Russell's men? Oh, back in the day, Quentin Russell operated what could be called an alternative law enforcement agency here in the county, Sheriff Roy recounted. Actually, I should say that he allegedly operated an alternative law enforcement agency here in the county. There's lots of evidence to show what he was doing, but there was never any proof, nor was there any prosecution. What was exactly Quentin Russell's connection with Johnny Ross and Lou Gilbert? Quentin Russell was effectively Lou's right-hand man, as I hear it, Roy explained. He was a muscle behind Lou Gilbert. He came from somewhere in Kentucky near the river. He was drafted into the Army on his 18th birthday, just as the Korean War was getting underway, and was given a general discharge 3 years later. My understanding was that he gained the reputation of being a bully while in the service. He liked to push people around. Gilbert gave him a job at the tavern within a month of his discharge. Came here looking for construction work, but Lou paid better. Johnny Ross hired him on as a part-time deputy, giving him a badge which Quentin took as a token which would allow him to bully people at will. From about 55 to 69, Quentin Russell cultivated a network of spies and enforcers to help him keep order around the county. All it took was a few beatings and a bleeding body or two left out in the open for most folks to realize that if they wanted to remain healthy, they'd best steer clear of Russell or Russell's men. I take it that Russell's men disbanded after Johnny Ross left for office, Tricia stated. Yes and no, Sheriff Roy continued. Some say that Johnny Ross lost his post as sheriff because Quentin Russell decided it was time for him to go. He considered running for sheriff himself after the Brown incident, but was quoted as saying that he didn't want to take the cut in pay. He kept close to Johnny and his family after Preston Wilmer took over the sheriff's office. Preston allowed him to continue part-time as a deputy, at least through his first year of office. About a year after Preston Wilmer took office, Russell quit being an official deputy. Most of his men had filtered off, although there were a few of them here and there scattered through the county. By most accounts, all of Russell's men were gone somewhere between 73 and 77. Well, Fred Granger and Sally Brown certainly think that Russell's men are still around, Tricia commented. Roy sat down behind his desk. I'm not surprised. There's been rumor off and on over the years that Russell's men are still operating. These days, though, Quentin Russell himself is said to be no more than a living shell in a nursing home. I am concerned, though. as someone is still making veiled threats in Quentin Russell's name, and if the recent rash of disappearances is connected to a new generation of Russell's men, it means that big trouble could be coming here to Fuller County. My best advice, Miss Tricia, is for you to be careful, Roy admonished. If Russell's men are active again, they may not take to someone meddling in their affairs. They were a dangerous bunch back in the day. If you get on the wrong side of Russell's men, you'd be foolish not to keep up your guard.